Yeah, I was asked to say something about binary scenarios that may achieve core ignitions, and I have assumed that this means scenarios that can reach where the white dwarf can reach the Chandrasekhar mass. And of course, you know, there are the single degenerate and the double degenerate channels. I will mainly be trying to say something about the single degenerate channel, in the end hope to say a few words about the double one. I must say that I do not know very much about all these things. I was very impressed yesterday and also today by the enormous progress there is in observational science about all these white dwarfs and binary white dwarfs. It's really staggering to see this advance of observations, and I concluded from this that astronomy is basically an observationally driven science, and we theorists are just trying to run behind these beautiful observations. You have seen this diagram many times at this meeting. It goes back 25 years or so from Fujimoto and Nomoto. You have seen it so many times that I don't have to explain very much. There is the stable burning without envelope expansion. Above this you have envelope expansion if the mass accretion rate gets above this. Yeah, and there is a region, of course, where you have the strong nova flashes, and then there is a region where probably the flashes are weaker, and maybe the matter can be retained also if you go above 10 to the minus 8 solar masses per year. That's in general the idea nowadays. Now, what about the super softs? You have heard about that, of course, beautiful things already today. And we know that there are three types. There is the classical types. The first ones discovered, but then it turns out that it was more complicated, that you also have cataclysmic variables and symbiotics who do it. Maybe I should tell a little bit about the history of the supersoft idea. We had here in 1991 in Santa Barbara a half-year program on neutron stars in binaries. And we had a conference, just like this conference here. And Trumper came with his new ROSET results, and he showed these super soft sources, and he said they must be neutron stars with some cocoon around them, which diluted the a big atmosphere of 1,000 kilometers or something like that around them. And then you know, of course, this famous saying by Eddington that you should never trust an observation until it has been proven by theory. And this was also the case here. When we looked at these things, you saw this picture also already this morning from Simon Starfield. ROSET had this fantastic advantage of having this very low energy channel, which nobody else had had in an X-ray satellite before. And these are three pictures, one of a supersoft source, but that we now know a supersoft source. There's a stellar corona, which is a few million Kelvin, but already in the hard channel there comes quite a bit of photons out. These are just rough photon counts. And then in a normal classical black hole X-ray binary in the Large Magellanic Cloud, it emits hard X-rays and comes out mainly in the second channel. And these channels you saw also this morning in Summer's talk. The soft ROSET channel had this detection range. It's a logarithmic scale, and the hard channel is this. And indeed, if you have something of 300,000 Kelvin, the Planck curve runs like this. You have interstellar absorption, and lucky enough, the Magellanic clouds are at high galactic latitude, so you look outside of the hydrogen layer. There is not that much, but still the very soft ones are absorbed, and all what comes out through is this. And this gave a very rough indication that this temperature is indeed something like 300,000 Kelvin for these sources. These sources were already long known from Einstein, because CAL means Columbia Astrophysical Laboratory, And these Columbia guys had discovered them around 1980 or 1981 from Einstein, but they thought they were black holes because Cygnus X1 has this bright, soft state, and they thought they were black holes in binaries because it was known also that they are binaries. Now, but if you just use Stefan Boltzmann's law and you have the luminosity and you have the effective temperature, which is about 40 electron volts, and you can calculate the radius, and it comes out like a radius of a white dwarf. And one of the people here at our workshop then said, okay, they could, that was Josh Grindley, said, okay, then they are accreting white dwarfs. But when you calculate that, you need a very large accretion rate, 4 times 10 to the minus 6, and then you easily see that these soft X-rays cannot get out with such an enormous accretion stream. But the amazing thing, of course, is that people always think about accretion when they see X-rays, but it only works well at a neutron star or a black hole, because there the gravitational well is very deep, and you get an enormous amount of energy out if you accrete. But the white dwarf has 500 or more times larger radius, and in the case of a neutron star or a black hole, nuclear burning is totally negligible, because a hydrogen burning gives less than 1% of mc squared, and here you get 15% of mc squared, so you can forget about nuclear burning. But with a white dwarf, nuclear burning gives much more than accretion, and so if you say, okay, they are burning, then you need much less accretion. But then Sol Rapoport and Deepankar Bhattacharya and I, we did not know exactly how to calculate this, but then lucky enough, Kendo Moto came by to our workshop, and he had already calculated all these things 10 years earlier. That was this diagram which I showed you. And so then we all knew that you could make them easily by nuclear burning on the surface of a white dwarf. Now the only problem is, how do you get this accretion rate? And then of course this was, if you have a companion which is more massive than the white dwarf, you get this situation that when it starts overflowing the Roche-Lobe radius decreases, but the thermal equilibrium radius does not want to decrease, so you get mass transfer on a thermal time scale. And so if you put in a companion more massive than, a little bit more massive than the Sun, you get mass transfer rates above 10 to the minus 7. And of course, nature must make such system. If they make CVs, why the hell would it not make also systems with a white dwarf? It's a more massive companion, so nature makes everything. So of course these objects must exist, and then of course these had already been identified earlier by N. Cowley and by Pakul as binary systems, these two systems in the LMC, and one of them was known to have this 1.4 days and the other 10.6 hours, Cal 87. This is very strange. It looks like an algol light curve, but it has nothing to do with an algol light curve, because it's the bright disk and the heated side of the companion which is eclipsed here. Here you look at the backside of the star. And when the disk goes in front of the heated side of this companion, you get a secondary eclipse. It looks like a normal algol system, but it is not at all. And it, particularly this very heated side is here, and there's clearly also a lot of wind coming out of that system. But now the final proof that they are white dwarfs came from this other system in the Magellanic Cloud, which happened to be just in the field of in one of the macho fields. So there is observations every night, optical photometry, and of that system shows these long off states, optically down states, and then optically bright states, and then down states, roughly with a 50-day recurrence time. And during the optically weak state, the X-rays are on, the soft X-rays, and in the optically bright state, they are off. And apparently this is a system which is just at the edge, the upper edge of the stable burning, because the brightness indicates that there is still a lot of energy generation when the X-rays are off. And so apparently they come out in the optical. And in that system, if you take a spectrum, you see the satellite lines of the hydrogen and helium lines, you see, like in SS-433, these jets coming out with velocities of 3,800 kilometers a second, and that velocity is typically the escape velocity from a white dwarf. So that system kind of proves that we are dealing with a white dwarf, and at the same time it tells you that if you transfer more matter, too much matter, apparently this matter is blown in some way, in this case in the form of jets, out of the system. Now, Haki Ergelmann discovered that one old nova, Nova Muscae, is also a super soft source, was still more than a decade after the nova explosion, was still burning hydrogen. So apparently in a nova, part of the matter can be retained and still burned after the nova explosion. We also think that by these weak flashes, they it's still possible to have the star burn and retain the matter that falls onto it. The same may be the case in symbiotics. Now people have been trying to do already from very early times, making population synthesis to see how many of these super soft sources can you produce. And Rosanne has been doing, of course, together with Saul Rappaport, did the first extensive population synthesis calculations, and I'm sure she will be talking a lot about this after me here in the afternoon. And other population synthesis calculation was done by Jungelson and colleagues already more than 10 years ago. They included also the novae and the symbiotics in that. Now the big question is, what do you do if the mass transfer rate is above this stable burning rate? Does the star build up a red giant envelope, or is something else happening? And some people, even in Livio and also Tam and Ivanova, they assumed that you get something like a common envelope, but it's a very tenuous common envelope. So but that this matter in some way is lost then, like in a common envelope case. Another approach was thought of by Akichu, Kato, and Nomoto, that this matter is blown off from this white dwarf, or the disk around the white dwarf, in the form of a wind, a strong radiation-driven wind, like we see in this system in the Magellanic Cloud, this one system which I just showed. And if this is the case, and if the white dwarf has something like, is very close to the Chandrasekhar limit, you have a radius of the white dwarf of a few thousand kilometers, the escape velocity from the surface is very large. And so in the late phases, you would expect this wind, because the wind velocity is typically of the order of larger, a little bit larger than the escape velocity, to be very large. And you would think this wind could already create quite a cavity before the supernova goes off, and maybe the supernova does not even eject matter as fast as this wind was, so may have a hard time to catch up with this wind in the end. But in any case, what do you do in this case? Most people have now thought this to be probably the best approach, indeed, if you say the matter which is transferred is, and the excess above the Eddington limit is blown out of the system with angular momentum, like the orbital angular momentum of the white dwarf, you can do the same, by the way, in the case of neutron stars, and this is what I show here with the four solar mass companion and a neutron star. There's a calculation which we did, but you can do exactly the same with the white dwarf. And also Philip Podziakowski and King did similar type of calculation. And you can keep this mass transfer still if the envelope of the star is radiative. So if you're not too far from the main sequence, you can do this. You get mass transfer on a thermal time scale at a very high rate. And you can, only a few million years in this case, but if you transfer more than, if you something like 2 times 10 to the minus 7, which you can accrete, you can still have quite a lot of matter falling onto the white dwarf, and accreted by the white dwarf. Now you can put all these things in population synthesis calculations, of course. There's another picture you have seen many times at this conference. The many different possibilities you can have if you start out with a relatively wide closed binary. Wide closed means that they interact. One of the stars becomes a red giant, you get common envelope, you get a closed system, relatively closed system consisting of a white dwarf and the other star and evolve. If the systems are not too wide, a few day orbital period, you can evolve into a cataclysmic variable or two, into one of the standard type of super soft sources. It's also possible if the system is a bit wider that you get a giant. Thank you. It still can become a giant, and so if you get into a second common envelope, you get two white dwarfs, you go to this double degenerate channel. If the system is still a bit wider, a bit closer, you do this already while the star is helium burning, so you could get a helium core and a white dwarf in a common envelope, so you get one of these AMCVMs. Like systems coming out of it. There's a helium donor coming out of it. And so there are many channels to go to a supernova, and you can also do it along the channel of symbiotic stars if you start out very wide. Now, this is just a picture from Lev Yunelson's simulations. From his simulations, you see that the symbiotics do not produce very massive white dwarfs, while the typical systems like Cal83, Cal87, they have white dwarfs going up to the Chandrasekhar mass, and also the CVs can do that. Just these Cal83, Cal87 systems in the simulations, most of them have donors from a mass range about 2 to 3 solar masses, and white dwarfs in this range, the ones which can reach the Chandrasekhar limit. And Philip Podsiadlowski and his associates get similar types of results from their simulations. This is just a picture of what Lev Yunelson got from his simulations with assuming just one starburst and then looking in the course of time what kind of objects are coming out, and then it turns out the double degenerates coalescing in the course of time, the rate of that, it peaks already very early and then goes on until about beyond 10 billion years. The supersofts, the standard supersoft, they peak somewhere between 200 million and 2 billion years. And Philip Podsiadlowski with his associates get similar type of results. Only the peak of the supersofts is higher in his case. This one. A factor of 5 higher. And actually, this is not so bad altogether, because if you look at the population synthesis programs of them are so different, and there goes something like at least 12 different parameters into these programs, that you get something agreeing within a factor of 5. This is really very good, actually. Now, yesterday you heard that so far no double white dwarfs have been found with masses above the joint masses, some of the masses above the Chandrasekhar mass. You can be sure that they exist, because we have double neutron stars. We have 8 double neutron stars in our galaxy. They have had 2 supernova explosions, and they still stay together in a very narrow system. White dwarfs have no supernova explosions, so it must be much easier to keep white dwarfs together in a double white dwarf system. If you can keep together 8 double neutron stars already in our galaxy, of which 5 have orbital periods so short that they will merge within 3 giga years, and 4 of them even within 1 giga year, it must be easy to keep 2 massive white dwarfs together in a closed binary, I think. And we even have we have neutron stars with a massive white dwarf companion in a very narrow orbit. This system has a 1 solar mass white dwarf and a neutron star of 1.28, and this one Well, this will not merge, but it's still pretty close. It's a one solar mass white dwarf and a neutron star. So I think if you have these systems which Ralph mentioned yesterday, just below, with a sum of masses just below the Chandrasekhar limit, and we see these systems which have a total mass of 2.3, I'm sure there must be double degenerates in between. And so I think there can be very little doubt that these very mass systems with a total mass much larger than the Chandrasekhar mass must exist also in nature. So if I just summarize this, you would expect that in a population between, from the work of the Russian group and the Oxford group, that somewhere between 200 million and 2 billion years, that the super softs may be an important source for making white dwarfs at the Chandrasekhar limit going over it, and at all other epochs, double degenerates might do it. I just say a conclusion here, which was from the Oxford group, that it's too early to rule out any of the proposed scenarios. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
I wanted to quickly ask about this hot winds. I mean, you have maybe not invented them, but you mentioned them, and I wonder if you have a white dwarf and there's a radiative fast wind, the radiative wind on a white dwarf can really only be efficient in terms of really losing mass if the luminosity is high, like if it's up on the plateau.
These are the Eddington limit.
Well, I mean, it would then have to be very, very fine-tuned and probably would not be there. It would, if it is, has a fast wind, it would be where it would very quickly either move in the one or the other direction. So I don't see, this cannot be sustained.
I'm talking about accretion rates which are above the Eddington limit for nuclear burning. So you form an accretion disk around the white dwarf. So the white dwarf is accreting and it is burning, but it's the companion is transferring more than it can swallow. And the idea is that with its luminosity, it just blows off the excess, like you see also in X-ray binaries with neutron stars, that things like that, and in black hole cases, things like that do happen. Can either be the disk which produces the radiation pressure or the white dwarf itself. But something has to happen to this excess matter which you are dumping onto the... But we see in this one system, in the Magellanic Cloud, that it is blowing off matter with 3,800 kilometers per second.
Yeah, and they're just interject. There are a bunch of those, actually, that have jets at thousands of kilometers per second.
In our galaxy, there are several others who do the same thing.
CVs also kick stuff out, but they're well below Eddington luminosity. Just the fact that you see stuff coming out doesn't prove that model is correct.
You're right, but as I mentioned, that system in the Magellanic Cloud has its phases where there is no X-rays coming out, but then at that phase it's optically very bright. And the feeling is that the energy is still there, but now it's just getting too much matter there. And the it's still burning, but the X-rays are absorbed in the excess matter which is flowing into it. I mean, I cannot see any other way to explain these two modes of existence, that at the optically low phase we see the X-rays coming out, and at the optically high phase there are no X-rays, so but the same energy is still coming out.
One other alternative that's been proposed for that system, and it seems to work for some of the lower luminosity supersoft sources, the so-called VY Sculptoris stars that have, they're more CV-like, is that you might have some photospheric variations.
Yes.
And so the photosphere gets larger and gets smaller, and sometimes when it's too large for you to see the X-rays, but nuclear burning may still be proceeding and you're getting the light out at other wavelengths, and at other times the photosphere gets smaller and make it extra. But this, as so far as I know, is that's sort of a cartoonish model.
Yes, yes.
The details
need
to be worked out to really see what's happening.
Yeah.
Just to interject again, there is also in this photospheric expansion model observations of the that are consistent with this kind of photospheric expansion expanding all the way to the optical. So they get A-type spectra.
The nuclear burning in the double mergers was discussed yesterday and will be discussed tomorrow again. But in certain conditions, certainly carbon is ignited outer layers, and that convert all CO composition into oxygen. So
you mean that's in the double degenerate?
Yeah. But it's still the many cases the neutron star may form rather than type 1 explosion. So that condition still depends on the details of the space simulation and so on, and that we have to be careful in final conclude. But we have to be careful in concluding like that.
If the double degenerate channel works, then there are enough of them, it seems. Yeah.
Any other questions? Let's thank our... Oh, one more question.
I wanted to reiterate, there's such the strong bias selection effect against finding massive white dwarfs in a magnitude-limited survey that I talked about yesterday. If the Ralph Napowatzky's group can only look with an 8-meter telescope at things brighter than 16.5, the search volume available for finding the things that he's looking for that are near the Chandrasekhar limit is much smaller than that of the ordinary types of white dwarfs, and that's why there are so many 0.4 solar mass white dwarfs instead, because the selection effect is in favor of finding those.
Well, the great thing about radio pulses is that you can see them all through the galaxy, and so finding them with a massive white dwarf, and this neutron star in that system, if the progenitor had been just a little, been a little less massive, say, this neutron star had a progenitor probably of 9 or 10 solar masses in such a system. If it had been 8, you would have had 2 massive white dwarfs. So I'm sure they must be there. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, let me remind you, I mentioned 2 systems yesterday which are not in our SPICE sample, not in this brightness limited sample, where we have 1 pre-white dwarf and a white dwarf sitting in a binary exceeding Chandrasekhar mass. But okay, we cannot get a statistical result from this because the selection effects are not understood.
Yeah, and this system, by the way, will merge also in a rather short time. It has an orbital period of only 4.8 hours, so the neutron star and the white dwarf will merge. If this neutron star had not been a neutron star, but just a white dwarf of 1.3 or something like that, it would have had a nice couple with a mass far above the Chandrasekhar.
Interesting. Let's thank our speaker one last time.